You know, he looks more like Bray every day.
Yeah. And the eyes.
Hey, Amber, sorry. I didn't mean to.
No, it's okay. At least I have more than just memories. You know, I've got a living, breathing part of him.
Well, if he turns out to be half the man his father was, it'll make you very proud. Brady and I would never have survived without him.
Hey, welcome to Series 4, Episode 48 of Conversation on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
And Tamsin.
Hello.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 4, Episode 48, the screenplay was done by James Wiley. It was directed by Peter Nathan, and the episode synopsis was read out by Tamsin.
The Paradise program is launched to a lukewarm reception, forcing the technos to turn to the Morats for help in promoting it. Jay has doubts about abandoning the city.
Amber and Trudy discuss their past with Bray and Ebony, and Trudy doubts Amber's assessment that Ebony has changed. Later, Trudy happily taunts Ebony about Jay having gone for a walk with Amber.
Hi, Trudy. Have you seen Jay? Yeah, gone for a walk in the woods. With Amber. Oh. Don't worry, they'll be quite safe. Amber knows them like the back of her hand.
For making it clear that she hasn't forgiven her for sending both Bray and Amber into exile, she wants them both gone. So yeah, panel, what did you make of Amber and Trudy's conversation about leaving the past behind, and your reaction to Trudy's conversation with Ebony?
So, I liked the fact that in this episode, Trudy is a bit of a chaos demon. She basically winds Ebony and Amber up at different times and watches them go. Because obviously, she has not forgiven what Ebony has done. And we've spoken about the fact that Trudy doesn't talk about what Ebony's done to her. She views it through the lens of what Ebony has done to Amber and Bray and the baby. But I liked that element where she was just winding them up to watch them go. And she plants these seeds separately in Amber's head about things. She also plants seeds in Ebony's head. And yeah, it's just a way for her to get at Ebony, I think, because obviously Trudy has tried to bring this up with Amber in the previous episode. She doesn't want Amber in the camp, Ebony in the camp with them. She doesn't trust them. And I think she can't take her head on, obviously, but she's just sowing all these little insidious seeds. And it just reminded me of when Trudy did that back in season 2. I mean, it wasn't as good as that, but she has that ability, doesn't she?
Yeah, I don't mind her being petty. It's not like she doesn't have good reason to be petty. My only complaint about it is her reasoning is all about what was done to Amber, and there's like no pettiness in there based on what was done to her, because it makes sense for Trudy to feel this way about Ebony. Even if in season 3 she was like, well, maybe Ebony could change, blah, 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 we all got on that, and how annoying it was for Trudy to be like, let's give Ebony a chance. And it's like, are you freaking serious? But all of a sudden, she goes to war at dawn because of what Ebony did to Amber, you know? That's my only real complaint about that. Otherwise, I don't mind her being petty to this person who's been torturing her since she was 14 years old. Yeah. So, like, go for it. Have fun. I found the scene to be a little expositional, you know? It felt like it was for viewers who came to the show for season 4 and have never seen the others, and they have no idea what the history is between Amber, Trudy, Bray, you know, and so they're just filling us in Because it did feel like a conversation. I mean, I don't think they did a terrible job with it. It comes up because Ebony's presence is bringing all these feelings up for Amber, you know, and making her feel reminiscent of Bray and everything she's lost because it's somebody from the city. It's someone from their old life. But it definitely had that expositional, like, what you missed, fellow kids. You know what I mean? It had that.
Yeah.
Right. That feeling to it.
Yeah.
Just so you know what the history is and how it's going to be relevant to what happens next.
Yeah.
And I did think it was, I thought it was funny that Amber's holding her baby for all of 3 seconds before someone just randomly comes and takes him away. And I was like, okay, like, what is that about? Like, I mean, I understand she was in the middle of like leadership duties, but she's just chilling, having a conversation. She's not peeling potatoes. She's not busy. This person just came on cue to take the baby.
He's not that kind of mom. We know this by now.
Meanwhile, Trudy's over there, like, struggling with an actual preschooler in her lap on camera. And Beth was like, oh, no, I didn't sign up for that. I don't think so. Somebody take this baby. I can't deliver my lines with this baby.
They don't want to be that kind of mom. They just don't want it to be that mom.
No. No, and let's be honest. Bray, look, young Damien, I'm going to call him, because that's who he is. We all kind of agree he's such a misstep in the narrative, and him existing and the way that she handles this baby compared to the way Trudy is with Brady, it kind of shines this negative light, I'd say, on Amber a little bit. Because as you said, the first thing she did was just pass him over to somebody, and they were just sitting there having a chat. And I get that they probably had to do that because the baby was fussing, or it kind of kept making mistakes with, you know, they were trying to do lines and maybe it was doing something like crying or farting or it pooed itself. All the things that babies do because they're not aware of the camera being around them. But to me, it just felt like, we just don't need young Damien.
Yeah, he's such an afterthought in the narrative for the next, just going forth. Every chance they have to have her hand, I want to make this clear. I am not judging Amber as a mother because she's, you know, she's basically a career mom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
She goes to work and she needs someone to take care of her kid while she's at work. So I'm not judging her for that. I just do think it's weird, the visual language of showing Amber barely interacting with her own child. And I'm not really sure why they made that choice, especially in a scene like this, where if you need to visually explain why Amber needs to have her child taken away because, you know, the baby's not acting right, give her something to do.
Yeah.
You know, more than just having a casual conversation. Like, because if she's not really doing any business, it just looks odd how often they do this with Amber and her baby, where we'll see Brady hamming it up on screen and Trudy's still dealing with her. And it's just like, why? And as you said, it gives Amber a negative connotation as a mom, which isn't fair because it takes all types to be a mom. And there's nothing wrong with a mom who's like, I have a babysitter so that I can read a book. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. But again, it's just visually looks weird that they do it so often with Amber, especially when they're constantly playing her motherhood card in the plot. Like, it always keeps coming up.
I think you said it expertly right. It's a choice. They decide that I don't understand. It seems like they didn't want Amber to be a mom because every opportunity is like, okay, get a baby away from her, get a baby away from her. So we can just have Amber, the leader, Amber, the inspirer, Amber, the, you know what I mean? The city leader. We just don't want her to be the mom. So it's like, so then why did they even bother going through the whole pregnancy storyline with Bray? I just don't understand it because they just keep taking the child away from her. You know what I mean? I don't understand why position her like this.
I guess at some point with the baby, the idea was, and I don't know when Dwayne decided not to sign back on for season 4, but I'm guessing the scripts were already written before he decided he was not coming back. And so maybe the plan moving forward was that they would kind of, when she's doing a bit, like she's giving a speech, he's got the baby, and vice versa, so that they would be co-parenting young Damien, as opposed to Trudy, who's a single mum, but they would be taking turns to look after the baby in different situations. That's the only thing I can guess was the plan for this.
It could be just their tendency to want to drop full plot lines from seasons before when they jump into the next season.
Yeah.
They pick and choose what they want to continue. I mean, the pregnancy in season three was there for nothing more than drama's sake.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why it was expedited her giving birth when it was like, you've been pregnant for 3 months. This is insanity. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was all there for drama. And then season four came along and they just weren't interested in the fact that they already had decided and they couldn't backtrack on her having a baby, you know, and they enjoyed the drama for the very beginning of season four. But now it's like, you're stuck with it. She had to be, it's not a puppy. She can't rehome it. You know what I mean? She has a kid now and that has now become part of her personality. But I think Lance is onto something. They never wanted it to really be a part of her personality. It was just meant to be the button on she and Bray's love story. And now they don't have she and Bray's love story. So the baby is basically an inconvenience to whatever they want to do with Amber. And conveniently, the baby's always being taken out of her arms, even when there's no real good reason for it.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I'm watching Trudy wrestle Brady during intense conversations. She's squawking and doing her thing. And these two, they've got their rapport. And Trudy's still delivering everything flawlessly. It's like they're totally okay with Trudy's identity being mom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, never, she's not allowed to be any, in fact, she's not allowed to be anything else. She's not even allowed to be a lover, you know what I mean? Or happy. She's just mom. That's true. Yeah. But Amber, it's like, oh no, we feel like that diminishes her somehow. And conveniently, there's always a minder to step in and grab that baby for her. Oh, but they'll pull the mom card whenever they need to motivate Amber to do something. And suddenly it's like, I'm doing it for my baby. And it's like, where is he? What are you talking about? What baby?
You said, it makes her look so bad.
Right. And it's just like, why did they choose to do that? Because again, I'm not faulting her for being a career mom, but they go out of their way to make it look like she barely has anything to do with that child.
I'd also add that there's a tendency in shows like this to create, as you said, a pregnancy storyline and not think through the full ramifications of it. Because I have, in a previous job role that I had, I used to do child performance licenses, and it takes a lot of work to put a baby in a show. And also, you know, it's really expensive. So it's not one of those things that you can take lightly. Yeah, I think we've all kind of reached the sort of decision with this that they did take this lightly and they did kind of abandon it when they got to season four. And yeah, it's just, it's really interesting because they don't do anything, as Liz has said, as you have said, to build that bond where you actually believe that Amber is Damien's mother.
Or how having become a mother has affected her.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Outside of convenient plot points, that's when he comes into play. When it's like, she has to make a choice she doesn't want to. She's doing it for him. But otherwise, it's like, he might as well not exist.
And let's be honest, her reluctance to go back to the city should really be more around, she almost died the last time she was there. Young Damien doesn't have a father, he doesn't have a mother. If anything happens to her, you know, she's reluctant because she's thinking about her baby. But instead of that, he's completely not part of the equation as to why she decides not to go back to the city.
Yeah. And of course, it just makes it easier for the fans to pit the mothers against each other as who's a better mother, you know? And I don't really like that because
I don't like that from the fandom.
Yeah.
No, I don't.
But again, I really feel like going for it. We'll get further into it in this episode, but it just feels like they switched out Amber as their favorite character and made it Jay.
No.
And we Amber get gets sacrificed for Jay being their favorite character.
Yeah. It's incredible what happens.
They kind of do a similar thing with Ebony and Jay, don't they? As well, where she kind of builds him up and she's there to make him feel great about herself. And he's there to teach her lessons about what it is to care about other people, etc., etc. And yeah, they do this with both Ebony and Amber, but it is much more obvious with Amber. They just become props to the I Love Jay team.
And everyone is just thrown under that bus. It's just
Everyone.
To get him
everyone
pushed up.
Like, are you freaking kidding me? Ooh.
I mean, I've never thought I would actually say this, but I kind of wish that Amber just stayed dead because of what they do to her character.
It's okay. It's a tough, is a tough one because, yeah, what happens next is horrible for me personally because I was one of my favourite characters. But I do love Amber when she came back as Eagle. I do love that period. So, yeah, I'm glad she's back, but I don't like what happens next.
Yeah.
She's a great, she's a phenomenal actress. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah,
she is.
Yeah.
She's so good. Like, just give her some meat and she's fantastic. Yeah. But why did you give her this?
I mean, I'll take a deified season 3 Amber over what they do to her.
Yeah.
And you guys know that I had a problem with how she was handled in season 3, you know? Yeah. But I'll still take that. It's still Amber, you know? It's still Beth kicking ass and doing her part as the actress, and I still enjoy her. But what they do next is just like, couldn't you just have left her to live in peace with the egos? I'd miss
and it
her.
It hurts because there's few good, like, female characters, friendships in the show. And we have this one forming between Amber and Trudy. And you're like, no, we can't have that. We're not going to have
we're
that.
We're going to throw that one under the bus,
throw
too.
Them against each other again. Like,
we're getting ahead of ourselves, but.
Yeah, I know.
But it is so frustrating to see it go down like this. And you can see the start of that here. Yeah. Really?
Right. Yeah, I think we mentioned it last episode, the switch that happens is so quick. It's like...
Nope. I don't think we talked about Trudy's confrontation with Ebony. I think we touched on it briefly, but again, I agree with you guys. It's so frustrating that Trudy never uses any of her personal ammunition against Ebony. But I wonder if that is because, as we've sort of talked about before, that she doesn't feel like she can go toe-to-toe with Ebony about that because she's also done some shady stuff herself, whereas Amber hasn't really done anything ever to sort of hurt Ebony, really. Like, Trudy makes a point of saying it's not the first time that Amber's gone off with the man that you love. But it's the way that Ebony looks at Amber and the way that she's kind of reorganized this in her head to be that Amber stole Bray from her is, I think, really interesting. And they kind of play into that. And that becomes the narrative, I think, moving forward. I think if you asked a lot of fans who started with this season, so season 4, did Amber steal Bray from Ebony? I think they would say yes, because that...
Or even just this season, even previous seasons, you can see in the chat, they seem to believe this narrative that Amber stole Bray from her. Like, no, it's never happened.
It's so wild. It's like, you broke up 9 months before he met her, or however long Trudy was pregnant. It could have been a couple of weeks, let's be honest, if it's like young Damien. You were fully broken up and you had never met this chick called Amber before. He just bumped into her. It was not calculated. And they were friends for like over a year before anything happened between them. This is wild.
It's very funny because like Ebony has run the gauntlet, at least before she was more consistent with her delusions of how things went down with Bray, because she's even accused Trudy of stealing him, you know? Mm. And it's like, okay, that's consistent with the way Ebony views things. Anybody who got in the way of her getting Bray stole him away. So Trudy got in the way, Amber got in the way of her shots at being with Bray. And so she sees them both in the same light. But yeah, but that's her personal narrative. That's just the way Ebony saw things. But then it just becomes folklore that Amber stole him. And it's like, if Amber stole Bray from anyone, and you know why, you guys know I don't prescribe to that way of thinking. You can't steal anybody.
No.
Brady's the only one who's ever been stolen. She and her mother, they've been physically stolen. But if you were going to say Amber stole Bray from anyone, she stole him from Celine and Trudy. Like, they all played... like hot potato with him. So like they all got a turn to steal him. Trudy stole him from Ebony, and then Celine stole him from Trudy, and then Amber, just by existing in the mall, stole his interest from Celine. But it's just like, Ebony, you're so far down the totem pole of people that Amber stole him from.
Right.
He'd already gone through several hands before he got to her. So, like...
Bray is the used car.
But I also love it. These people always forget to acknowledge that, oh, I dumped him first before he moved on. You know?
Looking at you, Celine.
Ebony and Celine, you guys dumped him. And Rudy is the only one who acknowledges he couldn't have been stolen because he was never even with me.
Yeah. Like,
he's the only one who acknowledges I was in Delulu land and you were never my boyfriend. So
I think the writers definitely fan that, though. They fan the flames of it was Amber and Ebony and Bray, when, as you guys have said, it was much more complicated than that.
If we want to make Trudy never want to be angry at Ebony for the thing she did to her because of her own lack of self-worth and thinking, I deserved it because I'm horrible because I went to the Chosen. Fine. Okay. If you're going to be mad at Ebony for things she's done to Amber, let's start from the beginning, because banishing her and Bray from the city wasn't even the worst thing she's done to Amber. Okay. No. Top of the list would be leaving her on a friggin' mountain to die.
Yeah.
I think that tops all the bad things that Ebony's done to Amber. Kidnapping her boyfriend, putting a hit out on her in season one. She's done many horrible things to Amber, facilitating her kidnapping.
And then, like,
the banishment is barely the tip of the iceberg of what Ebony's done to Amber. But again, they're just the storyline and how simple they want to make it. And, like, Bray is the conflict between Amber and Ebony. And it all started the day Amber stole him away.
Yeah.
Oh, my word.
Yeah. I mean, Series 4 is done that a lot to streamline that whole storyline as much as possible, I guess, for the new audience. But yeah, it's just,
and it's like, I would be dropping lore bombs. It would make people interested to want to go back
go back and watch
the story.
Right,
it's about world building. Your world is big, lots of things have happened to these people. Pepper that in there, you know, that these guys have a rich history of betrayals and hurts and sometimes allyship. There's a lot that's gone on. Why are you simplifying it? Because it wouldn't make me interested to go back. If this was the first time I was watching The Tribe, I would not care about this past conflict. If that's what you're telling me is the problem between these girls, I'm not going to go back to the previous seasons to check it out. It sounds boring and cliche to me.
Yeah, I agree.
So yeah, back to the city. The Paradise rollout begins, but people are cautious and uptake is slow. Ram is impatient to get his ready space afterlife plans in order, and Java goes to Celine to get her to promote the new program, threatening her job as city leader when she expresses reservations.
From the start, their agenda has been clear. To take the city and use it for Ram's gratification, to indulge his twisted fantasies.
But wouldn't it be better that I'd be involved? At least then I'd find out about stuff from the inside.
But you'll only find out what they want you to know.
Then why do they need me?
PR exercise?
Celine goes to Pry to talk through her doubts, and they do manage to have a civil conversation, leading to Celine going away to try and make her decision. So yeah, what do you make of Celine's moral dilemma and her discussion with Pride?
Is there a moral dilemma here? Because as city leader, what does Celine actually do? I'm asking that as a question because I'm unsure myself, really, what she does or what she's ever done since she made that list of demands to Ram in that one episode. Because as far as I can see, she can just leave this role and nothing will happen.
Yeah, nothing would change. I think this is really poorly done because it's there to create tension. The audience is supposed to be like, oh my gosh, her job as city leader is on the line. But it's like you haven't emphasized her as a leader anyway of the city and what she's done for the city. So who the frick cares if she doesn't have the job anymore? As Samson said, nothing would change if she didn't have the job, you know? So why would the audience be invested in what decision Celine's going to make? Is she going to fight to keep her job or is she going to go along with the technos? It also makes Celine look really stupid that she has to like, oh, you know, but maybe she has the audacity to tell Pride, but maybe if I was involved, I'd at least know what was going on and I could help. And it's like, did that help before, Celine? Right. Were you able to, you made the same excuse to Pride. And Pride, as being a jerk as he wasn't wrong when he said, no, you'll be their puppet. You won't be able to do anything. And it turns out he was right because she was able to do nothing. In fact, she seemed just as out of the loop as anybody else, regardless of being city leader. Then they completely forgot about her being city leader. And then only after we brought up, like, they remembered she was city leader. And then they were like, oh, we should do something to quell the mob. It's like, it's been weeks of mobs and you're finally going to do something. And now her position as city leader is supposed to matter. And Celine's like, hasn't learned anything.
Yeah. This is such a non-story as well. It doesn't affect anything. It won't affect anything. As you said, Celine just looks like a fool. And what is this? Just a place for Pride to give fairly good advice again so that we don't all think he's awful, because we all know what the next couple of scenes are going to show with him.
The little only difference between this scene and the first time she was thinking of being city leader is that he's not screaming. Like, that's the only difference, is that he's having a civil conversation with her about it and actually listening to her, whereas before he just basically said, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
That's the only difference.
That's it. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's quite pointless, to be honest, yeah.
It's a waste of time. It's like they realised they didn't have enough to fill out the episode, so they just cobbled together this scene.
And I couldn't believe that they wrote a scene where Java comes in threatening her position as city leader, and Celine's looking like, oh my gosh, they're going to take my job away if I don't cooperate. Rather than being like, okay, go for it and see how good you, see how far you get. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, why even make Celine the figurehead of the season, the leader, when you just have taken nothing but massive dumps on her the entire time? What was the point of bringing her back with this attitude, gung ho, I'm going to handle things. I learned some stuff in the wilderness for those few weeks I was out there, da 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 da. And then just have her passively wandering through her own storyline. Because her being city leader hasn't even been her storyline. It's her putting up with her psychotic boyfriend. That's been her storyline.
Yeah.
She's just a passenger and staring blankly, lost. And it's just like, what the?
If anything, the story is about a woman who arrives with self-actualization. She's got focus. She's ready to make decisions for herself the first time ever in her life. And we just watch her slide down this slippery pole back into old behaviours that we've seen her do 1,000 times before. Now, narratively, so the payoff could be it's harder to change than you initially think when you go back into a situation, or you have to do more than just change one aspect of yourself. That's not what the narrative is about. It's just they needed somebody to warm the seat while Amber is not around. And it had to be Celine, because if it's not Celine, who else would it have been?
Yeah. And the narrative could have been that a toxic relationship will suck everything out of you.
Yeah.
Because, Pride sucked all of her fire out, all of her life out, all of her confidence out. Now she's sitting at the table staring at him, lost, not sure what she should do, and still believing that if she does the same thing she did last time, she'll get a different result, you know? And, could have been the story, that this is what he did to her.
It's also, though, it's an action replay of what she did to Ryan. But she's in Ryan's seat this time. And the way she was with Ryan, that is pride. When you really get into it.
They at least knew that that's the story they were telling.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
They understood that this was not healthy and what it was doing to both Celine and Ryan. And like, that was what the focus was on. You know, this, I don't think they have any clue what story they're trying to tell. It's just stuff happening.
I think it's more frightening than that though, Liz. I actually think at different parts, they thought this was a healthy relationship.
Ugh.
Well, just the way that the writers canonize it and Celine sort of makes it seem like this was the best relationship she'd ever had, which is rubbish because we've all seen her with Ryan. Yeah, I honestly think, and there are people out there that still think this was a good relationship. So yeah, I think on the part of the writers, they were writing this, I think, as a good relationship. And it's just so toxic.
You know, when people say that they ship Ryan and Celine, I get it. I understand. Because Ryan and Celine's highs were very high. Mm. It's unfortunate that their lows were so low. But I can at least understand the snapshots of Ryan and Celine's relationship that people are clinging to. Where are the snapshots of Celine and Pride's relationship that people are holding on to? Even Ved and Chloe had snapshots that I get that people are holding on to, you know? Mm. But this one, are you friggin' serious?
Yeah.
This is the worst relationship in the entire season. Because there are no great highs. There's nothing there to hold on to that would make you root for these two. He's been a horrible boyfriend to her from the start.
And she's been a doormat.
Even Zandra and Lex had high points, moments that you were like, I get why these two click. I get what their deal is. They're not healthy, but I get it. You know what I mean? And I do not see it in Celine and Pride. I do not understand. Where are the pictures? You're going to have to show me these snapshots that you're holding on to that are evidence that there was something there. They don't even have chemistry, for Pete's sake.
Yeah, I was literally just racking my brain trying to think of a single high moment that I could think of that was like, yeah, this is them. But no, I can't. I really can't capture that moment.
Trudy and Dal had more chemistry. Zandra and Top Hat had more chemistry than Celine and Pride.
I mean, it goes back to what the whole start of the season. They had to put them together because there was literally no one else. They had no one else surviving to do this with.
And they didn't care what it looked like. They're just like, throw it in the bowl. It doesn't have to be edible. Just put it in the bowl. Yeah, their relationship is like the fruitcakes of fruitcakes. You know, that it's the stories that come about when people talk about fruitcakes and why you don't eat them and why it's the worst present anyone can bring you for Christmas. That is Celine and Pride.
Wait, I love fruitcake.
Oh, Tamsin, get out of here.
No,
go home. No. You are not allowed, okay, for this analogy to like fruitcake.
Oh, my goodness.
Pride sits down with May, who tells him about her time in the techno mines and how she became hooked on reality space. But Pride isn't so honest in return, telling her that Celine never had a thing for him. So yeah, go ahead, panel.
Okay. Right, go on, Tamsin.
Okay, I'm ready. Can somebody explain to me what the timeline for this is mentally? Because I understand that May has been offered tits on MySpace addiction since she came back. So maybe she doesn't know what's going on and maybe she has missed things. Okay. And often when she's seen Bride and Celine together, they've kind of been shouting at each other. But it feels like this is so late to have come in because when she first arrived, that was the time to have done this story beat, I feel personally. And it feels like they've remembered, oh, hang on. We never sorted out that thing with May and Pride and Celine. And we could generate some more drama out of that. But it feels like she's been living in this mall with these people now for such a long time. And she must hear conversations. I mean, like Lex is always making innuendos about people. And she can't have been deaf to some of this. And I'm just baffled. I'm baffled. Explain it to me, please, panel.
Okay. I'm going to guess by the timeline that, let's see, May made her reappearance the day that Chloe disappeared. So we're going to just say, let's roughly give it 3 weeks. Okay. Mm-hmm. And for a good 2 weeks of those, May was pretty out of it. Just mm-hmm. not, she couldn't tell the difference between real and unreal, and then immediately started playing the game as soon as she was well enough to get up. And even then, she was like talking like she didn't know where she was half the time, what was going mm-hmm. on. Like she often treated everyone like she was just dealing with NPCs in the game. I can actually forgive May for not realizing, not coming to clarity until she heard that conversation between Jay and Pride and hearing Amber's name. And I'll buy it. That's what dredged it up for her to come back to the now, to come back to the reality. I will give that one a pass. It's lazy, but I'll give it a pass. It's not explained, but I will let that slide. What I cannot let slide is that Celine and Pride haven't had a conversation about this yet. Why, for them, it never occurred to them that this is going to have to be talked about. This is going to have to be dealt with. What, you know, Celine being like, so what are you going to tell to her? What, you know, you guys had a thing going. And I mean, now we're together. How, you know, how do you even feel about that? You know, they've never had that conversation. That's what they should have been privately talking about that from the day May showed back up. But both of them are behaving as though it never occurred to them that they would ever have to talk about this and haven't even rehearsed in their own heads what they would say. Pride, you haven't rehearsed in your head what you're going to say to your booty call when she finally questions. Like, they're both staring at her. She is talking to you like you're still in a relationship, Pride, and you're not shutting it down.
Yeah.
You're acting like, I never thought this day would come. What, were you just so relieved that she didn't mention it when she came back, when she was clearly, like Tamsin said, off her tits? And all of a sudden, 3 weeks later, she's just talking to you like she's still your girlfriend and confused and has no idea that you're dating someone else. And you're going to be like, I can't talk about this right now. And like, are you, that's what I don't buy. I don't buy the Celine and Pride weren't already either discussing this amongst themselves or to themselves, like, oh, okay, so what is going on? Even the question of how come May hasn't said anything about this? Because, I mean, she was into you when she left. Do you think she's mad at us? Just anything.
Yeah.
But nope.
Or even a conversation about, she's so ill. Will she understand? When should we tell her? How do we tell her? How do we make her understand?
Even do you think she remembers? Maybe she doesn't remember
that
we were a couple.
Yeah.
Is that a good thing? You know, anything to acknowledge that they're aware that May should be talking about this and she hasn't, and be somewhat prepared for when she does. Or at least I would forgive their shock in like, oh, we got so used to you not saying anything that we thought we were, you know, we thought we were clear, you know, but you'd have to address that. And they never did. And so it just feels like the writers suddenly remembered that May had a history with Pride and brought it up for drama's sake.
I was thinking about this earlier as I was watching the episode. To me, it kind of feels like because May was a sudden bring back because we're losing Chloe, we need a veteran back to fill the gap. It feels like they already had storylines and stuff in place, so they had to leave this until now. Because they just didn't have the space in the script to fit this back in.
Interesting.
But it was obviously handled so badly. Because,
Lazy.
Yeah. It could have peppered those episodes with all these conversations you just mentioned. Like, oh, May's back. What should we need to talk about this? We need to think about this. What's going to happen? What's going to be our response to her when she comes back out of it? Like, all these kind of things could have been seeded through all the episodes we've had. But it's like, no, we've got all these other things we already put in place, so we're gonna have to put this all off until now, and that's why it's all weird.
Even involving other characters into that discussion, because you know that Lex would never miss an opportunity to bring this up whenever he could to make Celine and Pride feel awkward in front of May.
It says so much about the quality in writing and the care in the storytelling that's dipped. Because you guys have to remember, these guys restructured an entire season after already writing it and planning it around a certain character, only to realize that character wasn't coming back and they had to replace that character and redo their entire season to shape around the new character. And they managed to pull it off. Is it flawless? No. But they did it with season two because Dani clearly wasn't meant to be there the way she was. They lost Beth and they already had season two planned out. You know, they did from start to finish. They knew what they were doing. They knew where they were going. And that is packed to the rafters. There's very little fat on season two. Okay.
Yeah.
They had those kids working round the clock. They didn't waste any daylight filming that season. And so when you think about that, they cared enough to make it work. And for the most part, Dani does. For the most part, she does. And yet here, they have to make the strategic change and they didn't even try to make it work. May just wanders in the background like a ghost for 3 weeks before remembering. And then, like, okay, now we can tackle it. We're not going to explain why. We're just going to deal with it now. Maybe the viewers won't notice that it makes no sense.
Mm. Yeah. What else can you say?
And that's not even a whole season. That's just like, oh, one character that you have to squeeze in some more conversations that will affect the rest of the storyline. It's not like Celine and Pride's relationship was going to suffer. I mean, it already sucks. So it's like, you could have been like, ooh, opportunity. We need them to have fractures in their relationship. We've brought May back. We've got it. Let's use this, you know? Mm. She can definitely be the source of their fractures and stuff like that. But no, they were like, but we already have a storyline for him. It sucks, but I don't want to change it. Mm. And I'm like, wow.
And also, it paints such a poor picture of Pride yet again. He's just so spineless.
Yeah,
he's just a piece of work, because this is not Celine's place to say anything, really, because although she is in this relationship with Pride, although they're kind of on a break, aren't they, at the moment, it's his position to deal with this and to talk to May and let her understand that even if he isn't with Celine, he's definitely not with her either.
Is Pride the most spineless character that's ever been written? Like, at the end of the day, when you strip him of everything, like, is there really anything there?
For me, he's below Ned.
He is below Ned. I've never seen Pride fight for anything, really work for anything that matters to him. You know, this whole season with all this indignant rage, what has Pride actually done for anyone, you know, aside from save Jay? Thanks. Thanks, Pride.
You shouldn't have. You shouldn't have.
I think that's the only thing you really did that changed the story, is make sure that guy was still breathing. But otherwise, like, what does he bring to the table? What has he brought to the table? And who is he at his core? Spineless.
Mm. Yeah. But he's got that pretty privilege, hasn't he? Because he's good looking and that's it, really.
I don't know. I feel like, I guess I'm more a demisexual. So it's like a person's personality affects how attractive I find them physically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, like, for example, Lex remained attractive to me until pretty much around season four, when many of his good qualities just got flushed down the toilet and they just weren't doing anything with him. That's when he became less attractive to me. Because even back in season one, he was attractive because he still had attractive qualities to him as a person. Things that made him compelling, made me interested. Yeah. Even when I was like, oh, you're so horrible. You're so horrible, but I kind of love you anyway, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like Pride, there's just so little there that I can't even see the attractiveness in him physically, because his personality is just such garbage.
Yeah, he's awful. He's a monster. But I think what's interesting about Pride is that he is a genre of man that I think a lot of people have encountered in their lives. So although he's, you could argue he's a badly written character, but in one way, he's actually probably one of the most realistic ones, because he's all talk and nothing really behind it. He's deeply selfish. He's flawed, but he tries to pass that off into somebody else. It's never his fault. It's always your fault. And yet he's definitely, there is a genre of man that Pride speaks to, I think.
Pride's mediocre.
Yes.
That's all it is. He's mediocre.
A terrible boyfriend.
Terrible friend.
Yeah.
Terrible at his job.
Yeah. Completely abandoned his tribe.
Yeah.
Although they really want him.
Has no real moral compass at the end of the day.
No.
A liar, gaslighter.
I mean, why is he still in the city? That's always my question.
Yeah, we've given up on that one. He's here because the script needs him here. And I don't even know why the script needs him here. They don't like him.
And they don't do anything with him.
No. Let me see. How many more episodes till he's dead? We're getting there. We're getting close to the wire. Oh, poor Nick. Poor Nick. I can't imagine signing up to play Pride, who started with such promise and being like, yeah, I want to play this person. And then by the end of season 4, he's like, I'm not coming back. Just kill me, please.
Yeah.
I'll show up for my death scene. That's it.
Poor May. I was just thinking, like, she was just there telling him about her trauma, everything she's been through to get back here. And he's just like, just no ounce of honesty from him at all.
Yeah, no remorse, no empathy for her situation. Like, oh my gosh, that's horrible. Like, compare it to Jack telling Ellie that the one thing that got him through his captivity. And look at Ellie struggling, because it kills her to hear that Jack went through all of that and the only thing he was holding on to was her. And yet here she is, developed feelings for one of her captors, and not wanting to hurt him. You could see it all over her. She's struggling with that. She didn't want to hurt him. She wanted things to go back to the way they were. And they weren't, unfortunately. And it's just like, that's someone who cared about him, you know? But Pride? Nothing. Not an ounce of feeling. He's just like, wow. That sounds bogus,
sucks,
man. Crappy vacation. Anyway.
Oh.
And she paints such a terrifying experience of what it is to be there. And we've lost so many characters to this now that when you hear it, you think, that's Bray, that's Tysanne, that's Chloe, that's Jack, that's Ellie. They're all experiencing this.
And none of them care.
Yeah,
none of our remaining Mallrats care.
No.
They've seen what happened to May. They saw what happened to Amber. And none of them care. This is what's happened to everybody they lost.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're just like, wow, bummer.
Yeah.
Like, Lex, that's happened to your wife, you know? Not a thought in his head about it.
Yeah, like, how have they actually developed paradise? That's the thing.
Right.
Guinea pigs.
They used your friends as guinea pigs, you know? And you saw what happened to them, to one that was just in there for a week. You saw what happened to Amber, how that messed her up, the way she described it. Here's May. No one was interested in even hearing May's experience. They just let her wander around, you know, clearly out of her mind. And just like, well, as long as she's not causing any trouble.
It's horrific.
Speaking of horrific.
No!
That expertly leads us onto our next topic.
Oh, God.
Jay and Amber have a heart-to-heart about their regrets, with Amber still bitter about having been made to flee by Ram. Jay then expresses his doubts to Ebony about what they're doing, confessing that he's worried about Ved, but she encourages him to stick with the plan. However, having reflected on it some more, Jay tells Amber that he decided to go back to the city and wants her to come back with him. Amber gives in to temptation and kisses him before he backs away. Go ahead, panel.
Okay, so before you two get into this, and I can't wait to hear what you're both going to say, I just want to say But I thought it was really interesting, the choice to have Amber kiss Jay. That's it, right? I'm off the mic now.
You can't just plant that and leave it.
Right, go.
And boom! Oh my gosh, where to start? Okay.
Yeah.
First of all, what does Amber mean that Ram is the person who made her flee the city? That would be Ebony, the one you're so gung-ho to just let the past be the past and bygones be gone. She made you leave your city, okay? She's the reason you had your kid in a barn and your man was in a position to be kidnapped. That was Ebony, okay? But you guys are cool now, I guess. So it's Ram. What, you were gonna stay in the city? Was that your plan? You were going to abandon your baby with the Gaians and stay in the city and it because you had to leave. I thought you were going to leave. I thought that was the plan. What do you mean Ram made you leave the city? So that doesn't make any sense. She was the one who, when she found out the Technos took over, she was like, I'm not going back there. She was gung-ho to take her baby someplace else, to go back to her resort town. She uses whatever she needs to recoup from whatever's happened to her in the city because that's all the Gaians are to her. And that was her choice. Okay. Ram didn't make her flee anything. Ebony, first of all, did. And her plan was to always go back. All right. So that's just convoluted right there. That crap. I want to make this very clear. If Amber wanted to mess with Jay just to get back at Ebony, I wouldn't care. I honestly wouldn't. Because what does she owe Ebony? Absolutely nothing. If she wants to get under this woman's skin and kiss her man.
Preach. Yes.
Go for it. I don't care. Go ahead. Be petty. All right. Mess with her because she's been messing with you from the day you met. I don't care. Go ahead. Your man's, as far as Amber's, she's single, first of all. All right. So she's not betraying anyone. Her and Ebony aren't friends and she doesn't owe Ebony anything. So I do think Tamsin has a point. Why make it Amber kissing Jay? It's to make Jay be off the hook for what he's already started to do. From the moment, okay, I'm fine with, fine, Jay's changed his mind and he's still holding on hope that the Technos could have made the city a better place. All that blah, blah, blah crap to, you know, excuse his abhorrent behavior and being involved in kidnapping and slave trading and all that stuff. It's because he wanted to make the world a better place because the girl I knew died once. You know what I mean? Fine. He changed his mind. Okay. That's fine. Why does he need Amber to go back with him? Why is he pushing for that? Isn't this a conversation he should be having with his girlfriend? The, you know, Ebony, the one he said he needed to stop Ram. Remember that? Remember when he was suddenly like, oh, I need to stop him. Ebony, we can do it together. You know, and all of a sudden he needed her and we can be a what us. All of a sudden, Ebony's not necessary anymore. It's Amber he needs. No, this is just part of his game. He got everything he needed and wanted out of Ebony. He's already bored. The minute he showed up, he's had eyes on Amber. Suddenly, he needs her. He needs her to fix everything. We, you and me, Amber, when, what, so many episodes ago, it was he and Ebony who were going to fix it all. They were the ones who were going to bring Ram down. That's who he should be talking to. That's who he should be like, girl, I've changed my mind, and I think we should take him down. That's what we should be doing. But no, he's already moved on to his next project. And that's why Amber has to kiss him. That the narrative will not allow you to see what the frick is happening in front of your face because you're 14 and you don't know any better. You don't realize this guy's just playing a game. He's running a train and Amber's second on the list. That's all this is. What does Ebony have to give up anymore? She burnt every bridge. She gave up everything. He got all he needed out of her. All the stuff to build up his ego. That's how much she loved him. This woman in her Revlon nails is out here in the frickin' forest with you. He got everything he needed. Oh, she can't build up his ego anymore. He needs this one. Amber. I gotta win her over now. This one, I gotta get her to leave her home, leave her baby, go rebuild the city with me.
Yeah.
None of it makes sense except that this is just him playing games, using people. Freaking sociopath over here. And that's why Amber has to kiss him. She's going to be like, oh my gosh, he's reminding me of Bray. He's talking about changing the world and making it better. And I haven't been with a man in so long. It's got to be her who falls for this, it. And it makes no sense that she would.
This makes no sense. I was watching this, trying to keep it together. I was like, suffering from whiplash. Like, I feel like we've missed a chunk of story that was meant to be told between Amber and Jay because this sudden connection that they have has never been on display before. They have never had these deep feelings for each other, huh?
I don't think they've had deep feelings, but I do think the connection, the writers have been trying to allude to a connection between them since before Amber actually left. They shared a couple of moments and they've confided in each other.
There was no time. There was one. They shared a couple of scenes. That was it. There was no deep conversations, connections.
I thought that was enough.
I don't actually think that's true. I don't believe that when they introduced Amber as an insecure trigger point for Ebony, it was because they already envisioned Amber and Jay being together. I honestly think it was just there for drama's sake, you know, so that there would be tension between Ebony and Jay at that point. And every moment that Jay and Ebony, Amber had was full of not romantic tension, sexual tension. It was her laying into him about being a spineless creep. And now they want to act like these two had some camaraderie.
Yeah, they did not have deep history and come through things together. Like, no.
He's coming. Like, remember when she was last in the city, he was sitting there trying to make excuses for his part and da da da. And she was just like, man up. I don't want to hear your crap. And if you actually are supposed to be this good man you claim to be, you'll watch this CD that I've left behind because I've had to go on the run and prove that you're actually a decent man. I'd like to believe you are. You say you are. But that was it. But the way they're talking, like, these are two, these guys were old friends who worked to try and take down Ram together. I honestly do not believe that was the goal when they wrote those scenes. That's just me, though.
It's crazy because he goes in, he kneels down at her, face level, goes right in, grabs her arm, is like, I need you. Like, what? Where did this come from?
Connection. With the one so ham-fisted, right? This is me not... Look, I just want to be clear. This is me not giving them any flowers. I want out there. I'm actually criticizing the writing here when I say this. That every time she kind of... When we've seen them before, she turned around to him and said, oh, you've done this, you've done that to the city. Was that the writer saying, this is the first woman that's ever stood up to Jay and made him realize that there's another path? Is that what they were trying to say? Because I wouldn't put it past them, if I'm honest. I hear what both of you are saying, and you're both right. You're both logical. It makes sense what you're saying, but we're not dealing with logical people who care about sense. We're dealing with people who just care about pushing this narrative with Jay and will use any tool in their arsenal to make him look better, more desirable, more interesting, more a man of the people.
Well, I know. You may have a point. It could just be sloppy, bad writing, and they thought they were doing something. And all they did was prove to us they wasted our time throughout an entire season of building a love story through between two terrible people who deserve to be together and would be, they should be together. Like, they really should just go off into the wild together. All right. And then they did a rug pull and said, ha, gotcha. You know, they thought that was clever because from the last moment those two had together was after the Scarecrow. And they was like, that's the last moment we're going to give them.
Yeah.
And it's like they knew immediately as soon as this is what nobody's coming. We're going to hook these two up together. And Trudy and Hawk are the only ones talking sense who were like, make them leave. Are you freaking kidding me? And Amber's like, no, I mean, you know, everything's cool. Like, I mean, Amber's sitting there telling this guy, our camp isn't safe. The Technos have attacked us before. We're constantly moving. And she's completely unbothered by his presence. And I don't buy Amber falling for him.
That's what gets me. This is that exact point is what gets me. Like, you're going to try and tell me that Amber is given into temptation, that she is feeling so deep for him. She's forgetting the whole history of the Technos and what he's been a part of. Just like that. Yeah. No, you're going to have to do more than that. Sorry, that's not enough. It's not by a mile.
It's not that I don't believe that he could prove to her.
He could prove.
But it can't be like this.
No.
There's this No work, just a couple conversations. Work. 1 minute she's telling him, you should go off and be happy with Ebony.
Yeah,
I want that for you too. And then the next, it's just like, wow, it's been so long since a man has talked to me about changing the world. And I'm thirsty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I just want to put in a point here. Sorry to cut you off. But I just wanted to put a point in here. It's Trudy that starts this train because she's the one that tells Amber that Jay likes her.
Because that's the narrative trying to tell us it's okay.
That's the, yeah.
Yeah, but she plants the seed in Amber's head that grows this tree, I think, in that this leads on to that scene. And she's already been told by Trudy that Jay likes her. And then he's basically saying all of the things that Bray used to say. And I think it's, yeah.
Yeah, what?
Well, I think the writers are trying to do a thing here. But
oh, they did a thing. They did a thing.
There's no motivation for it. There's no motivation for it, as you both have said. It's just a sequence of events that happen that don't make any sense. But you could argue that's the entirety of season four. To this point, that has been what has happened. It's a sequence of events that have happened with characters that we have seen. There's no joined up thinking. There's no building into the story. There's no idea that this is the end point. This is where we're going to. This is where we're leading to. It's just another thing that happens. And like you say, it's over now with Ebony. The way Jay interacts with Ebony from this point will be hostile, but he still wants her there.
It's just bizarre to me that this was the choice they made. Because again, I'm not even saying that it's not possible for Jay to win Amber over, for Amber to eventually forgive him for the part he played in her child's father being gone. And that fact that she knows from personal experience what her child's father has likely gone through at the hands of these technos, if not worse, you know, that's if he's still alive, you know, much worse is likely to have happened to him. And she's got all of that in her head from personal experience and knowing that they were willing to do it to her too. And I can be like, okay, but that requires time. That requires time for them to be together, to connect on several layers and trust to be built between them. You know, because Amber has always been known for having walls up and not trusting men in general. I think Sasha was the one she was the easiest with because he was so different than anyone she'd ever met. And he was able to disassemble her walls very quickly by his lighthearted nature and the fact that he'd never done anything horrible to anybody that she'd ever known. You know what I mean? But I mean, think of the pedestal she would put for the guys in her life that they had to be able to climb up on that pedestal. And even a tiny slip had her judging them, you know? And you're going to tell me that this guy got under the wire with zero effort? No effort whatsoever. No real connection between the two of them. They've had like five conversations spanned over time and horrible experiences that she's been going through ever since they met and before. And you're telling me that's all it took for her to be like, he's hot, you know? And I haven't had any in a while. And I would love it if she just did it to spite Ebony. That would be great.
Yeah,
but no,
I wish that was the angle.
they paint it like she just can't resist this pull to this guy. Yeah. And it's like, what pull? What are you talking about? You're telling me you have less self-control for an attractive guy now than you did when you were 14?
Oh, yeah, but it's Jay. Come on now, Liz. It's Jay. Don't you understand?
I mean, it is exactly what you said, Tamsin, before. Like, the reason why she initiates it is to absolve Jay of everything that's going to happen.
Yeah. And making her the instigator.
And, yeah.
And like, wow. She just got thrown under the bus so that Jay can be their favorite character, be their Mary Sue, who can literally just waltz into the story doing whatever he wants. And never get called out for it. It's never his fault, you know? Everybody still worships the ground he walks on. Everybody justifies his actions. Every time he even remotely pretends that he feels bad for the things he's done, there's somebody to tell him, well, I mean, you tried, you had good intentions, it's not your fault, blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, are you friggin' kidding me? You didn't even let the season end.
Literally, you had four or five episodes left. You couldn't just end it. You couldn't just let this thing play out before doing this.
I think about Amber seeing Bray for the first time and how the both of them took one look at each other and were like, whew, I want that. But real stuff got in the way. And the more she learned about Bray, the more angry she got upset with him, because she was attracted to him, but she was not attracted to his behavior and the things he was doing.
Yes.
Okay? And it really got in the way. And even when all of that, think of how long it took for Bray to regain her trust after the Trudy and Celine stuff was gone. Before she was willing to finally let down her walls, he had to prove to her that he was actually a decent person.
Yeah.
Before she finally let down her guard and said, okay, I like you. You know what I mean? And they finally had their moment. And it was worth waiting for. That was 14-year-old Amber, had more self-control. Jay has had to do nothing but look pretty. And she's just like, I want it! Jumped on him like a frat boy at a kegger. And again, I don't care, like, for Ebony's sake that Amber did that, because again, Amber isn't the one in a relationship with Ebony. Jay is in the relationship with Ebony. Totally in the wrong here. He could have pulled back from that kid.
He could have pulled back.
I think you're pretty and everything, and I do want your help, but I got a girlfriend. I'm committed to her. She's going to be already going to be pretty pissed off that I'm changing plan. And think of the way he talks to Ebony afterward. Here he is pleading with Amber. So gentle, so kind, so understanding, appealing to her better nature. Think about the way he talks to his girlfriend immediately after. Well, I'm going back. So, I mean, if you want to be with me, you have to just come with me. All right. Yeah. And that's going to be, that's Jay in a nutshell. If you want to be with me, you have to jump over the hurdles I've just decided to put up today.
Can we talk about that conversation? That was hilarious. In the tent, he was like, okay, yeah, I'm going back. So if you want to come, you come. But if you don't, like, bye. That's it. We're done.
It's wild. It's
crazy.
It's literally been in the timeline. What has it been? A couple of hours since they were talking about this amazing life they were going to live together. And now he's like, see you later.
Yeah. Bye. Like, if I don't see you, okay, have a good life.
Yeah. Take care of yourself, girl.
And it's like, it's so crazy because once you are aware of his pattern, you can look back to the very beginning of him and Abby's relationship. And that's when I first started pointing it out, that he's the one who lays the hurdles for her to jump in order them to be together. If she's not willing to jump those hurdles, then it's her fault they're not in a relationship. Not his fault for setting these hurdles. But that's what Jay does. He'll just keep raising
analogy. Yep.
Yep. He'll just keep raising the bar. And then it's like, if you have anything to say about, well, that's not where the bar was yesterday. He's like, look, I want us to be together. I mean, if you don't want to be, then I guess we're not together. But you wanting to be with him requires you jumping his hurdles, not yours, not the ones you decided together, just the ones he's decided to put up. This is where the bar is today. So whatever we agreed to yesterday, it doesn't matter anymore. I changed my mind. And if you aren't on board with that, you're the one who didn't want to be with me. And that's Jay. And that's why I'm like, I don't know if he ever really loved Ebony.
He didn't.
He liked her. She was attractive. He was flattered by her attention. But he's been testing her from the beginning of their relationship. Just been one long test.
Yeah.
And then whenever she doesn't jump his hurdles, he's the one who's butt hurt. She broke my heart.
Yeah. He's never done anything that has put himself out to do anything for her.
Nope. I think the closest we got was him feigning, you know, letting her torture him.
Yeah.
You know, that was probably the most selfless thing he actually did, was be like, I don't want either. I know I'm already in trouble. I don't want to bring you down with me. You do what you got to do. That was the most sincere form of affection he ever showed her, you know? And yeah. And it's just like, look, you'll look at their breakup that's coming down the pipe. He's going to do the same thing. He tells her here, we're going to go back to the city. We're going to take down Ram, and then we're going to run away together. As soon as they take down Ram, season 5 starts. And what does he immediately say? We're going to stay here. Ebony, we can be together, but it can't be out in the woods. It's got to be here. And then he neglects her as she starts to lose her mind. And he even literally says it out loud that he cannot be there for her because he's obsessed with another woman. So when Ebony finally goes off the deep end and leaves him, guess what he pretends to be? Hurt. You don't want to be with me anymore? You're breaking up with me? When he literally did that on purpose so he wouldn't have to be the bad guy and break up with her.
Yeah.
He didn't even want her anymore, but she's the bad guy for dumping him. And you want to know what's even worse? Tail end of season 5, they have a moment to like be real about what happened. And he continues to gaslight her in Liberty.
Yeah.
She confronts him and says, so you never wanted to be with Amber? And he goes, no, I never, there was nothing going on with us. Lies to her face even then.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's about to go off and die.
Yep.
Yeah.
And all he cares about is what he looks like. He looks like the good guy. And the narrative tells us for 2 seasons straight that this is a great guy.
Yeah.
Mad.
And that's why I said about the Pride and Celine relationship as well. Because the narrative's trying to tell us a similar type of thing with their relationship. And it's just like these writers they don't know what they're doing, and it's just Mary Sue's all round, but especially when it comes to Jay, you're spot on.
Like, he's the worst example of their blatant misogyny in the series.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yeah, because it's never about him going from Ebony to Trudy to Amber, to basically going to Trudy because Amber's not interested at that point. And so he just goes to Trudy. She's a placeholder until Amber changes her mind and wants to get back together. People talk about the roles of the girls, but they never talk about him.
Never. Never.
No.
Mm-mm. It's never Jay.
They pit the girls against each other, them fighting with each other, and there's no acknowledgement of his actions.
But that's, again, like you said, that's the writing. The writing points pushes this narrative.
Yep, yeah.
And that is why Amber has to kiss him first.
Yeah.
So that it's justified when Ebony gets up in Amber's face.
Yeah.
Not her man's face, who's the one who changed his mind. That's who she should be shouting at. It's got to be Amber. And the crowd goes wild because Amber kissed him. It is her fault.
I also want to say there's a little, I would call it a gazebo, that I'm going to attach to this little house that you guys have created. And it's called The Narrative Also Wants to Conflate the Things That Amber Has Done to Ebony with the Things That Ebony Has Done to Amber. So this will be a thing later on that Ebony can kind of, oh, you've taken every man I've ever had a thing with. And as you guys have both said, the list of things that Ebony has actually done to Amber, you know, it goes to infinity. And they have been heinous, awful, horrible, despicable things of which you would never, ever, not only would you not forgive this person, but if you ever saw him in real life, you would attack on sight, right? But that's part of the narrative that builds up around this as well. So it's not just in service to Jay, it is also a little bit in service to that victim complex that the writers give Ebony and then try to say, oh no, she is right actually, because Amber once did this.
Yeah, it's insanity. And you're just left with your head spinning going, what were they even thinking in this writer's room? What was the goal? I know what the goal once was when you were telling the story. I do not know what it is now. I have no idea what it's been. You know, this season actually starts off kind of promising. There are some interesting ideas, you know, but they just were not committed to telling a story, to telling, you know, writing characters, experiencing what's happening to them. Mm-hmm. And this is just, whoa! I'm just,
it's one of the worst moments of season 4. Let's be honest.
Every time we think it can't get worse, it does. It's insane. Like this season deserves a medal.
Well, yeah, but let's think about season 3 though, and how the writers played off the Guardian's insanity. And really, really, at the last minute, they ripped the rug out and made it seem that Bray and Amber were complete morons for not going along with this and for not seeing this for what it was.
That was bad writing.
Yeah. So,
but it was still surrounded by good stuff. Tamsin, you're never going to get me to agree that season 3 ended worse than this.
I don't expect
it's not going to happen.
I don't expect you to agree with me because... that's why this panel actually works, because we don't all agree with each other and we've all got our different points of view. And I think that's what's really important. But I feel like there's this insidious, what I was trying to say is there's this insidious nature towards Amber that they all, I think there's somebody in the writer's room that really hates her character. That's what I was going to try and say. Because whenever, since she's returned, whenever there's an opportunity to say that she is wrong, when it comes to some of these big ticket items, she's wrong.
Or it could be a matter of trying to set someone up for a fall, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
Because, you know, people like to do that, like put them on a pedestal just so they can drag them down again.
Yeah.
It could just be lazy writing for drama's sake.
Well, it definitely could just be is that, let's be honest. You know? I mean,
and
yeah.
We're putting more thought into it than they ever did, you know, because we're trying to like, we're like, okay, so why as a writer would you do this? What would be your goal? And I think it's hard for any of us to actually fathom that there was no goal other than the splat.
Yeah.
That's the only goal that was actually in mind was the fall.
Doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
Right. The rest of us are like, there's got to be something because I wouldn't write this without a goal. Like, you know, but they're like, no, we just wanted the splat. That's all we were aiming for.
Can you imagine if season one had been as bad as these later seasons? It just would never have got off the ground.
I don't think it would have. I could be wrong. I mean, season four has an audience, you know?
Yeah.
It got new people to watch it while old viewers, some of them fell off. So it is possible. It just would have had a different audience. I don't know if it would have had the same reputation, true. You know? Like, I'm kind of wondering if it started like this, if it would be as beloved worldwide.
Yeah.
I could be, you know, I'm speculating. Like, I think about, you know, there are plenty of shows that start off strong and get crappy, but it's like, would they have had the chance to be crappy if they hadn't started off strong?
Yes.
And had a loyal fan base that, you know, it was so beloved. Would it be beloved?
Yeah.
Or would it just be some obscure thing that existed?
Yeah. That nobody really remembers.
Right. It just uses up its goodwill very quickly. It spends its tokens so fast.
Yeah.
And that's
like, right.
A good reputation is hard to build up, but so easy to lose.
Yeah.
But yeah, before we get to our final thoughts, just a quick segue. So hearing that Paradise is struggling to get off the ground, and despite Siva's disgust at the mental violation of the program reading people's minds, Lex goes to Java and offers to help sell it to the people for a cut of the fantasies. Does anyone care about Lex's scenario here?
Not really. It's just busy work again for Lex to do, isn't it? It's more scheming and machinations that aren't really going to go anywhere. I mean, what's he going to do with it? Just sell it as porn? Is that what he's thinking? That most people are going to have like sex fantasies and he'll be able to pop them out like, here's the CD, this is porn, that sort of thing.
I didn't even understand the transaction because it was for free anyway, so I didn't even understand
what he was getting. I assume is access to other people's fantasies and then he will sell them.
Yeah, and see, that this is where Lance is making the point. It doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
The technos are giving out fantasies for free. So even if they give him a quarter, like give him a percentage of their fantasies that they're already giving out for free, who's going to buy fantasies for him that they can just get for free from the technos?
Right.
But I think the difference is he would have access to anybody's fantasy that is in the game, right? But so anybody who uses Paradise.
But I don't think that's
what they were trying to say.
I think they're selling basic stock fantasies. Like, I'm popular.
Oh,
I'm famous.
Okay.
I'm a sports star. Right. I'm at the beach. I'm a starlet, you know, or something. Basic cliche fantasies. And he wants access to those basic fantasies.
Okay.
If he's asking for people's personalized fantasies, that doesn't make sense because that's not what's discussed in this transaction.
Oh, see, that's totally because it didn't make sense to me unless that's what he was asking for. But that's interesting. So, spoiler, that later on when we get May's fantasy and then his memories of Tyson, But they wouldn't have been able to sort of set that up, would they, the technos?
Well, if they already have them on file, yeah. You know,
but their specific like they wouldn't be able to recreate. This is where none of this kind of makes sense.
Yeah,
I'm really confused. Yeah,
because like you're right, they're selling generic ones, but yes, May is suddenly able to access a fantasy that's specifically of her and Pride, and
yeah,
and Lex is able to remember, and Shiva puts on the helmet and can see his memories. Like, how would the technos have that? So no, it doesn't make any sense. At the end of the day, how this works pretty much any more than most of the tech does. Crazy that the game made the most sense. it doesn't. And they don't clarify any of this.
No.
You know, they're just like wibbly wobbly time stuff. And that's where it is.
I just assumed that he was going to burn off CDs of other people's fantasies and sell them like porn.
Because I actually, I get like a fantasy where it's just like, I want a free fantasy of like my dream boat. And then you're just given this really generic, beautiful person that says all these wonderful things to you. Kind of like how Java did her affirmations, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's like a cyber boyfriend or girlfriend who texts you every day nice little things that make you feel less alone in the world. And that would work. But yeah, it makes no sense that...
Yeah.
Lex is able to use this to access memories he already freaking has, and his girlfriend can see these memories, and it doesn't make sense that May is able to specifically create a fantasy for her in Pride, again, because they're not designing these fantasies, they're just generic ones they're giving out, you know? I think we see one with Sammy already trying one where he's Mr. Popular, and all, and that's it. It's just a generic, everybody loves Sammy in this fantasy, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe maybe you can input something into it, because they are screaming Sammy's name in his, and it's like, why would a generic fantasy know your name, you know? Whatever. I don't care. I don't care what Lex is doing. I hate this. No. I hate it here.
it's more nothingness for him to do, and more secret keeping to Siva, and it's just boring. They haven't done anything with his character, they haven't done anything with the relationship with Siva for a long time, and it's just dull. It's boring,
especially
it's
since he doesn't have a goal.
Yeah,
like I'd understand if his goal was to get rich to provide for he and Siva or something.
Yeah.
But he doesn't even express having a goal any more than when he was doing the other things, when he was selling the little passes to go into the game. It was like, okay, so what's the goal? What are you going to do with your profit? Yeah. You know? He has no goal.
And giggles. So that's all it is.
I'm like, I don't understand. It'd be so much easier if they just explained that Lex had a gambling addiction. And he's just like doing it for the love of the game. You know what I mean? Like, he just can't help himself.
A little chaos demon. He just loves to create chaos.
Yeah, you know,
bored.
Like, it would make more sense if KC was involved in stuff like this, because KC was always trying to work towards a profit. He didn't have any great big goals. You know, he was just a kid who's like, I want to have stuff. You know what I mean? And I like having that kind of control and power. But it's like, Lex, what is your goal? What are you doing? What are you aiming for? What are you trying to get?
Yeah. He was also giving shades when he was talking to Patch of those Manosphere podcasters that you get. He's definitely a crypto bro, isn't he, Lex?
Yeah, the only good thing out of that was Patch was like, no. But I was like, again, I don't care, because I've seen the scene every season since the show started, and this scene gets worse and worse and makes less and less sense. The characters who even go to him for advice and take his advice, and the advice he gives isn't even stuff he does that works for him.
Mm. Yeah. God, I wish he'd just been taken away.
We can just imagine him and Tai-San together, you know, struggling together to defeat the captor.
Even giving him a storyline, like switching out the storyline so it's Lex that comes back instead of May, and then giving him a storyline where he's coming back. You know, Tyson and Alice have disappeared. He's been tortured repeatedly. He's got this addiction again, which is not a great space for him to be back in because he's been there before. And it's kind of how I feel that Ebony and Jay should have gone away and then come back in the last episode as this surprise reveal. Oh my God, they're back, you know?
All right, cool. That brings us to our final thoughts of the episode. Ebony is angry at Jay's decision and confronts Amber, not believing that she tried to talk him out of it.
You couldn't leave him alone, could you? You just had to get involved.
Ebony, calm down.
Don't play innocent with me. Jay wants to go back to the city just like that out of the blue to certain day.
But he'd already decided when he talked to me.
Then you admit it.
No, in fact, I told him not to go back.
Later, Ebony does agree to go back with Jay, and the two prepare to leave, only for Amber to announce that she decided to join them. So yeah, how successful, panel, do you think the writers were in the way they steered everyone back to the city?
Not at all.
They weren't. Yeah, they weren't successful.
Maybe if they had shown that Jay was reluctant to leave the city in the first place, you know, if he had shown more irritation, more anger that he was being chased out of the city, chased away from achieving his dream, if he'd ever shown it more anger just in general at not being able to achieve his dreams with the Technos this whole time, you know, you could buy that his dream is to save this frickin' city and to make it into something. And so, you know, if it'd been, you know, an undercurrent that he was struggling with this whole time, like, I don't want to leave the city. But he was eager. He was like, I gotta go. They're trying to kill me. Let's go, Ebony. He was all eager to get the frick out, on the run, thinking fast on his feet, happy with his girl. We're gonna live in a tree. Let's go. And not once did he show any reluctance until he sees Amber. So no, they did not build up to Jay's sudden turnaround. Oh, I care about my brother suddenly. I remember he exists. I gotta go back and save him, you know, and I still have this dream to save the city. It's like, even when you were in the city, you didn't seem all upset. Your dream was falling apart. You know, you weren't doing much. They don't even let us see when Ebony changes her mind and agrees to go. She goes from pissed off at him, pissed off at Amber. Next thing you know, she's agreeing to go back with him. So you don't even see how he talked her around, how that went. And then there's no like conflict for Amber as to what would convince her to leave her child and go back to this place to fight for the city. Even if it's just because, like, I do believe at some point Hawk calls her out and says, you're going back for the man. Just admit it. Straight up. You want him. Just, like, don't lie to my face and tell me it's because of something bigger. You think he's hot. I deserve the truth. That's why you're abandoning us again. You know what I mean? There's no moment where she's, like, just have her talk to Trudy about being conflicted about that. Like, he reminded me of something in myself and what I fought for. And I let my fears when my son was first born, I had to put him first and his safety. But he's never going to be safe as long as these Technos are running around. Just anything to express how Amber gets to that place. But instead, it feels like just a petty jab at Ebony that she shows up out of the blue. Like, I'm going. I'm joining you guys. Let's go. And it's all at Ebony's expense. Ha ha. Isn't it funny? And that's what the next episode is going to be. It's just going to be laughing at Ebony the whole time for being rightfully insecure at these two cozying up along, like, she's just a tag along on this camping trip in the woods. And the narrative's going to be like, ha ha, Ebony, you know, your guy is openly flirting with another woman. You're so silly for being insecure about that and upset. And it's badly done all the way around.
I mean, I don't have anything more to add to that, really. I completely agree with you. And yeah, there's nothing really, just terrible writing. Yet again, terrible writing. What were we expecting? Nothing.
And next, now we get to watch Amber and Jay gaslight everybody in the vicinity about their feelings for each other. And everybody else is the a-hole for calling them out.
Mm. Yeah.
For what's so friggin' obvious. You know?
Yeah. Mm.
But we can't blame Jay, so we'll make sure that Amber takes the brunt of the blame.
It's horrific. It's really horrific. It's so dark. I hate it. Do you think anybody actually likes Jay and Amber together?
Actually, I have never met a Jay Amber shipper, but it's usually because they hate Amber and what happened to Ebony. I don't feel like they hate them for the right reasons. You know what I mean?
Right.
But that happens a lot. A lot of people hated Danny and Bray for the wrong reasons, you know, and rather than just hating them because it's not a really good love story. they mostly just hated them because it wasn't Bray and Amber, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, she's dead, okay? He's a widow, you know.
It's interesting that you raise the specter of Bray and Danny, though, because the trajectory of their relationship feels very similar to Jay and Ebony, where at some point the writers just gave up with them and didn't want to continue on. And they just, because there's a lot of build-up with Bray and Danny, but towards the end, he kind of forgets more and more about her and other stuff sort of crowds in. And you've got that, I would say, with Jay and Ebony. The writers just, nah, we're not doing this.
The difference is they spent an entire season on Bray, and Jay and Ebony, making them the seasoned couple. Like, that's what we're following, this whole build-up to this will they, won't they, till they finally do for all of one episode. I think the reason that Bray and Danny petered out was because I do think much of Danny's story was supposed to be Amber's. Not all of it. Obviously, they had to make alterations, but I do think a huge chunk of it was. And the difference is, if it had been Amber the whole time, they wouldn't have had to build up a love story. They could have just focused on the things that Bray and Amber were in conflict about when it comes to what they do now that they have charge of the city. But since Danny was new, they had to get Bray and Danny to that place. So they had to speed run a relationship between them. And there was a lot of focus on making it believable so that we would believe that they'd fallen in love with each other in that short amount of time. And then it's like, okay, we've caught up to just them being in constant conflict. They didn't have to focus on it anymore. So I think that's why their relationship seemed to have petered out. Mm. But that's just my take. They wouldn't have had to do that with Amber and Bray because they would have already been established as a couple. So the focus would have just been on the things that they were conflicting over.
I mean, I always say think they don't know how to write couples for that conflict. They always have to create these, it's another girl's in the way, I'm jealous, miscommunication, we get kidnapped. There always has to be an obstacle as to why they just can't write them as a functional couple, just for a bit.
They used to at least try, but now it really is just, if they're already just a bad couple, they pretend they're a good one, and then they think the only idea of conflict is another person, and usually, yes, a female.
Yeah.
They're not even trying to write realistic functioning couples who are going through what young people would go through, you know. I do think they peaked back tail end of season two, beginning of season three. Season three had some good couple moments, you know, conflict, and given the circumstances the characters were in. Season four, I don't really think they try that hard. There's some sparks moments, and I'm like, okay, I see where you're going, but I don't really think they cared that much to do the work. Not if you can get the flash and bang for cheap, you know?
I mean, spoiler, I think the only couple after this that they actually invest anything in to show us the sort of day-to-day workings of their relationship are Jack and Ellie when they return. Yeah,
absolutely. 100%. But I think out of five seasons, Jack and Ellie probably get the medal for the most realistic and grounded couple that the show ever produced.
Yeah.
They, you know, they could be mundane. They could be boring. They were young. Yep. They got to grow up. They got to grow apart. They got to come back together. And then we get to see them at their best. Two confident young people working together and showing that they're better together.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well-earned happy ending, you two.
Well, season five feels like a reward for them as a couple, for them as characters, being together. Yeah, because you've, as you've said, you've seen them go on this journey, the ups and downs, but they've had that time to grow though. They've had these seasons, season two, they had all the conflict in season three that I thought was really interesting. Then you desperately wanted them to kind of get back together in season four. And then when they come back in season five, when they do get back together, it feels like a journey. It feels like a reward.
And what's so weird about Jack and Ellie is that by the time you get to season five, you've given up on them even trying. You know what I mean? Mm. Making a realistic couple, two people who actually better each other by being together. Or in it, they don't have to. I'm just saying, like, by then I've given up, you know, and now I'm just like, it's just for the drama. Every relationship is just for the drama. And yet when they write Jack and Ellie, you're like, so they are still capable of it. Why did they care with Jack and Ellie and like nobody else? I don't understand it. Were they somebody's favorite in the writing room? Maybe. Because I think they're the only couple that don't get absolutely destroyed in all of the seasons they feature in. Like, even their breakup doesn't try to destroy either character. It's tragic. It sucks. But neither character is really painted as the bad guy. Not even Ellie is really... The fandom gets mad at her. But I never felt like the narrative was trying to paint Ellie as a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, look at what they did to the Lex and Tysan. They ruined Lex and Tysan just by his behavior in this season alone.
Yeah.
And so it's stuff like that. I'm just like, Jack and Ellie, I think, are the only ones who really, and I'm not counting like Patch and Dee, because they're only around for one season and they're together for like a week and then they're gone. Jack and Ellie, though, are a real couple, established, born, bred, pulled through the trenches, and they're never ruined. What they love, their feelings for each other are never shat on.
Mm.
It's a miracle. I don't know how they made it unscathed. I don't know how they made it unscathed, especially since they came back. You know what I mean? That's a recipe for disaster to come back, you know, and yet they made it somehow. Like, somebody in the writer's room really liked you guys. Because they crap on Bray and Amber. Like, why? I don't understand. Completely desecrate Danny's corpse.
Hey, all right, cool. That brings series 4, episode 48, to a close. Thank you very much to the panel and your support by clicking on that like and subscribe and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of podcast yourself. Just search for thetribe.co.uk or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation. Just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk. And we'll see you next time for episode 49. So until then, bye.
Bye.
Bye.